B-Pod Studios.
97.5, The Fanatic.
Our friend Barrett Brooks on the Comcast Business Hotline. Hey, Barrett, good morning.
Man, you know what? You hit it on the head, man. I'm actually going through and breaking down my my spot on Baritone on what I was going to do. And I was kind of, you know, looking at how the coaching conflict is, you know, as far as the styles of which the Eagles have. And you know, it's funny that you came on because you hit it right on the nail. You hit the head right on the nail, man, because at this point, the two styles aren't vibing like they did in previous years.
Yeah.
So you have an extra aggressive coach in Doug Peterson. He wants this offense to be aggressive. He wants to go out there and make plays. And as I'm breaking down watching the film, the two just don't, they're not synchronized right now because the offense isn't scoring like it did when he was being aggressive in 2017, even 18 and 19. He wants to push the ball. He wants to get it out there. He wants to let Carson be a quarterback in which takes advantage of his skill set, and that's making sure that he, you know, trying to make every play perfect. Well, when you have that type of coaching style, aggressive, and then you have a passive coach in Coach Schwartz who doesn't like the blitz, he likes that picket fence defense, even though he now has DBs that can go out there and cover, it just doesn't vibe because, you know, the sudden change, just like the play with Doug called on the interception against, you know, this last game.
Yeah.
In that play, the primary on that play was supposed to go to the running back. It was supposed to go to Miles Sanders. The play was that Zach Ertz was the, you know, his route was going to be a natural pick to pick the linebacker who had the running back man to man. Well, Carson had the wrong read, and he's not playing well. So since he's not playing well, his aggressive nature, in coaching, is allowing them to, you know, to have big plays. So that play would have been perfect. They would have gotten the first down if he had got the ball to the running back. He throws to his major target, Zach Ertz, and it's an interception. Now, change of possession. As a defensive coach, you have to be aggressive, understanding that the offense is going to be aggressive. They're going to want to go down and score and make it happen. And the conflicting styles are you have a passive coach. Now, it's, you know, change. And then a quick change, and now your defense is out there. You can't go in there with a passive attitude. You can't go in because it goes on the players also. Your passive play calling also, you know, it drips onto the players. So their demeanor and how they're playing becomes that what your head coach, I mean, what your defensive coordinator is.
Sure.
And that's what's going on. The last play, the last touchdown, the scoring play. I mean, it was just a bad call. Cover two. Understanding that the number three receiver just ripped you for three touchdowns already and had one call back, and you're going to put a linebacker on him, you know, in that side of the zone when you have Rodney McLeod. I mean, Rodney should have been like, all right, they've been going to 11 all day.
Right.
He should have been like, as a veteran player, let me go over and help wherever he is.
Yeah.
I'm going to go help whoever. I don't care if it was Maddox on him or anybody else.
Yeah.
It's Slade. I'm going to fade to wherever 11 is because that's who Ben has been keying on. And, you know, they just didn't do it. So it's just a passive nature on how he's coaching, how he's calling plays, and it's starting to ooze on his players, and you can't do that. When he was aggressive against the 49ers, that aggressiveness oozed on his players, and those guys played aggressive. But when you had that passive type of coaching, it played. I mean, I talk to Seth all the time about
that.
We're sitting there watching the game, pulling our hair out. We're not bald because we cut our hair. We're bald because we watched this game, and it makes us crazy, man. But, I mean, that's just what it is, you know. It pisses me off that, you know, these, you know, things happen, man. You know, be aggressive. We're used to a Buddy Ryan type of defense out here. We want that aggressive nature. The late and great Jimmy Johnson, aggressive, sending blitzes and everything else. You can't be passive in this town. It just doesn't work.
I actually think you have to, especially in this day and age. You know, I'm real close to Steve Spagnuolo and Spags and I have had numerous conversations.
And, great guy.
And he is. And, you know, we always talk about the idea of pressures. And, you know, when he was, before he went to Kansas City and he had some time on his hands and, you know, we're hanging out with we'd be on the beach and sit there and talk and go, you know, listen, with the game being basketball on grass, there's even more of a need for pressures. And I remember having these philosophical conversations about the idea of pressures, especially with the way the game has changed, Barrett.
Right, right.
So, how would you, and we're talking to Barrett Brooks on the Comcast Business Hotline, what a pleasant surprise. You made my morning by calling up, buddy.
Man, I'm listening to you, man. Oh, you know I got to listen to you, man.
I appreciate that, brother. How would you look at Doug, and how would you evaluate Doug as a head coach? You know, his strengths, weaknesses, like what do you see as a game planner with his game scripts, managing the game, play calling, all that stuff as a guy who's in charge of the offense?
You know, a lot of people giving Doug a lot of slack, you know, I mean, it's almost like it's angst because they're saying he's not being aggressive in his play calling. But when you sit back and you watch all 22, uh-huh. and you know, just like you, I see you watch it all the time. Me and yeah. you have talked numerous times about us watching film. He has the play calling, you know, that are getting guys open. I mean, it's actually there. I mean, I see it. You know, I see just like the interception play. I see conceptually what they're looking for. I see what he's trying to do. He's getting guys open. The ball just hasn't been delivered like it was in years past. Carson's still a little off. So because of that, it doesn't look like he's calling a good game. But in all actuality, he's calling a good game. I saw numerous times where he set the play up that the play is supposed to get to a certain guy, but somebody on the offense messes up. No, you got to have 11 guys working in concert out there.
Yep.
And if this one guy messes up, and especially when it's the quarterback, he's the only one that can't mess up. You know, you can have probably 8 other guys mess up, but the quarterback can mess up. And when he does that, it really makes the offense look bad because now it looks like, you know, the coach doesn't know what he's doing. But in all actuality, his play calling has been good. I see conceptually where it's going, where it's supposed to go. And a lot of the times, Carson hasn't been able to get it there. Whatever reason it is, somebody messes up or even he messes up, it makes it look bad.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
So go back to that play on the interception where the ball's supposed to go to Sanders. Now he knows that. I mean, he knows the play.
Why? He called the play for that specific
right.
play.
No, I'm saying Carson knows the play. Why isn't he delivering the ball?
I think it's more so he's had a problem with getting the ball to running backs. I don't know if his touch is not there. He overthrows a lot of it or throws it into the ground.
So he doesn't want to make that throw?
Right. So if you look at it, I mean, how many times has he thrown to the running back? Even early in the game, the exact same play, well, exact same throw, he missed it. He threw it to the legs of the running back. And he just, I mean, for some reason, it's a hard throw for him. But why wouldn't he go to, you know, the player that he trusts the most? And that's Zach Ertz. And what Zach Ertz saw, and not making an excuse for Zach, I'll never do that because he should have been going full speed. He should have been going hard. But on that play, he understood that the ball was supposed to go out to the running back. So the way he ran the route, which is
so that's why you get that's why he got bumped off.
Exactly, because he knew the ball was supposed to go to the outside.
Right.
But he still should have played it hard. But he said, all right, my job is actually really done because I created the natural pick for the running back who's supposed to get the ball. And then he didn't, you know, go through the route as full as he's supposed to, as fast as he's supposed to, as hard as he's supposed to, because he felt as though, all right, the ball's going to go outside anyways.
Gotcha.
And, you know, interesting. Everything is tied together. Everything is tied together.
I'm with you on that. I am. All right, so that's an interesting thing. Now, What do you think of the game? So we're not seeing some of the mistakes that Carson's making. Like, I'll tell you, I did see one where there was a 3-man rush and Carson got sacked, and I don't think it was the line's fault.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, like everything is timing. See, you know, the last sack that they gave up, and it was on Jordan Mailata. He pushed him over the arc. He should have, you know, finished the play. I mean, sometimes you get the bear, sometimes the bear gets you. You can't be perfect all the time, especially when you're a left tackle and the quality of player that he was going against. Man, we're talking about a real good pass rusher. But Carson, you know, should have just got rid of the ball. A lot of the times, you know, you're not going to beat the defense all the time. Sometimes they win too. Those guys have paid millions of dollars to rush the passer.
Right.
So we got to understand, you know, that sometimes they're going to get beat. But I tell you what, that offensive line didn't play as bad as, you know.
I actually thought the offensive line played well. I did.
Absolutely.
I actually thought the line played well. There's a couple things I'm not in love with. I don't love the constant Jalen Hurts thing. I don't like bringing him in. And you know, the one I thought was good was on the sneak, and you had him in ghost mode and ghost movement. But I don't get the idea of taking Wentz out and putting
Hurts
in.
Well, you know, it's not good for Wentz.
No,
Wentz is not that guy.
Yeah.
You know, Wentz is not. He's not like what the quarterback situation they have down in New Orleans. New Orleans, we all know that Breeze is the guy. No matter what, Breeze is
going to
be the
man. Yeah, I
just
don't like it from a football standpoint either. Like,
yeah.
I'd rather you just played straight up. I mean, you know.
Well, they're trying to do something to try to get guys going. And I'm going to tell you what. Carson is not a fan of. In fact, he's not a fan of Jalen Hurts in the first place. He still doesn't feel as though Jason would be there, you know, be here in the first place.
So
he's
still
excited because of that anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a ridiculous pick,
but, you know, whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We could have got a weapon.
Exactly.
But
Chase Claypool.
Right,
he went four
exactly.
picks before Jalen Hurts.
That's crazy, you know. But, I mean, even, even the bigger wide receiver, you know, I mean, you know, the kid from Baylor who ran a 4.3, you know, we could have got him.
He got picked
the next pick after that.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, it, long story long, it's not – It's not in sync right now.
Gotcha.
You know, when you have a defensive coordinator who's passive in the way he calls. I'm not going to say he's soft, but he's passive in his play calling. And it just doesn't vibe here in Philadelphia anyway.
I agree with this.
We want that rough and tough.
Yeah.
We want that rough and tough. I'm going to go punch you in the mouth. You know, that type of tough. Even Emmitt Thomas, when I played, right? Emmitt Thomas is our defensive coordinator. He was always sending a blitz. He always had somebody.
He was great. Emmitt was a legend. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, he was always sending a blitz. You know, he was always putting pressure on us. And constant pressure, you have to do it these days. And he finally has some cornerbacks that can cover, and you still don't utilize them the way they need to be utilized. I mean, it just doesn't work to play 6 yard off of anybody. It just doesn't work because all the plays these days are quick, get the ball out your hands, slash, and especially when you have a defensive line like that, they're going to get up on you. They're going to try to get the ball out their hands as fast as they can. That's exactly what Big Ben did, you know, get the ball out of his hands. So you have to be a lot tighter defensively on the receivers because we know that's going to happen. I mean, so what if they get beat with a double move? That's what you got, and all, you know, a safety that, like, you know, McLeod, he for the most part, had a great game last week. A great game. Making tackles at the line of scrimmage. You know, he played great with the exception of that last play, the touchdown play, where he should have figured out, you know, all right, 11's been eating us up. Let's fade to him a little bit. We're going to, you know, keep an eye on him a little more than we did. And, you know, but other than that, he played great. But I don't think, you know, the passiveness as far as play calling, it just doesn't fit.
That's great stuff, man. Barrett, I mean, absolutely great stuff. You can see him pregame, postgame, live NBC Philly. Check out the podcast, Baritones.
I'm definitely saying this on there. That's my next podcast. Baritone is going to be over what we just talked about. And I'm so glad you were talking about this because a lot of people in the area don't realize what's going on, that the coaching styles aren't vibing right now. It's great that you went out and picked this subject today, man. You know, you're ahead of your time
bro.
As far as that, man.
Thank
ahead
you, brother. I appreciate that. You're the best, man. I thank you for calling, man. I really appreciate it. It was awesome. And I love your insight, brother, and love watching you guys on postgame. It's fabulous.
Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Right.
You too, B. Take it easy. Barrett Brooks.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.